Hi, this is Alex.
And this is Ripke.
And this is a mini DMC.
Powered by Meaningful Minute.
Okay, so today we're talking about parenting. We've had a lot of requests for us to talk about parenting on Mini DMC. I don't know if people think we're parenting experts.
We are not.
I think they just want us to have a candid conversation from one regular, non-trained parent to the next.
Right, from the trenches to the trenches. So we're muddling along with it, with everyone else.
Yes, we can provide that. So welcome to the show. Okay, so let's talk about, well, first of all, let's just give everyone sort of an idea of like where we're all holding in our parenting journey. I will tell you, at this time of recording, tomorrow is our 20th wedding anniversary.
Mazel tov.
Thank you. So feeling quite old, like 20, who's married for 20 years? Your parents are married for 20 years, you know, like what is going on over here?
We are our parents.
So, yes. So we've got a range. We have five. The youngest is turning 3 next week and my oldest is 19.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. So yeah. Lots of milestones. So, and also, I guess it's always important to acknowledge, I think, timing and spacing of children and families, because my family looks, for example, very different to your family, which we're going to explain.
Because I also have 5 kids, but my oldest is 13.
Exactly. And like, no, you can never know people's parenting challenges without literally being in their shoes in terms of the ages, the age gaps, the personalities. Like you can never know.
Their spouse's style.
That's very true. You know? And your own personality.
Yeah, like, and your own background. How were you raised? What was your childhood experience?
So for me, like we've got 19, we have 16, 12, and 9, and then 2. So it's very different.
Yeah.
I have, for me, you also have a 3-year-old now.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've got one teenager out of the house, another teenager who's a teenage daughter who can drive him places, who
That's
can
amazing.
Babysit. Ugh. It's like a very different
that
dynamic.
That is glorious. I have teenage nieces who can do it. So that is very, and they're fantastic. But yeah, that's...
But yeah, so what about... Tell us about your children, very briefly.
So I also have 5, Baruch Hashem, and my oldest is 13. I had 2 boys first, so I always feel like I have 3 boys and 2 girls. So even though it's like almost even, I still feel so much more like a boy family. Like I don't know why. It's just like a lot of boy energy.
The gender piece, true.
And yeah, so I have 13, 11, 10, 7, and 3.
You have an 11 and a 10.
Yeah.
Wow.
My first 3 are all 20 months apart.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
So that all of these things are also now, I think we're going to talk a little bit now about like those early years.
Yeah.
You know, my kids were, my first 2 were, 2.5 years apart. And then I had like a 4-year gap until my 3rd.
Yeah.
So those early years are going to look different for you and for me.
100%.
In terms of those like initial foray into parenting.
And also, was your husband, he was in learning when you had your first few, or he was in medical school at what point?
Yeah, so my first 2, my husband was in COLA for 5 years, so it was like the first 2. And then when my second daughter was born, my second child was born, my daughter, he was in COLA but studying his prereqs for medical school. So, yeah, I mean, all of those circumstances.
Yeah, yeah. My husband was in residency. Basically, we got married at the very end of his medical school. And then I had like my first 2 kids when he was in residency. And then my 3rd and 4th when he had his first job.
Ripke, we actually got a request for us to talk about our medical school journeys. Not that there are journeys or spouses.
I wasn't even in a journey. I married him in like the last semester. Like it was not even a journey for me. So sorry.
I don't know how many people would actually be interested in that, but yeah.
Okay, we'll think about it.
So if you could think back to those hazy days.
Yeah. Oh, they were a blur. It's so funny because it's, oh my gosh, I'm going to turn into such a cliche right now, but it's like, it goes so fast.
I don't know.
And like, it's so like the days are long, but the years are short.
Oh,
it's so true.
Some bubby told you
that.
Oh
my gosh. And now I'm telling it to everyone. oh, enjoy those days. No, but it was so grueling. It was so intense and busy and overwhelming, yeah, and never sleep. I remember very so distinctly, like a memory of my second, like me trying to get as a baby, me trying to get him to sleep, and then my first, like being a toddler, a boy toddler, yeah, coming and just like yelling.
Yeah,
I just remember crying. I was like what
am I meant to do?
Like, I can't do anything. But when I look back, it's amazing how nostalgia works. Because when I look back, I'm like, but we did so many fun things. We went to so many parks. We went to so many children's museums. We did so many activities because they were all babies together.
Right.
And we would just go. Along. We would just schlep them along. Yeah. We would do, like, what schedule did I have? I had like a preschool schedule. Right. It was like, I had so much freedom of time.
And you were home with them?
I was home with them.
So nice.
Baruch Hashem. And I worked a little bit. Like I was a permanent sub in a school. I worked in a bookstore for a little while. I've always been like,
right,
I've always had like things that I'm doing. Like I was in a band. Like, so I always had stuff I was doing in addition to being a mother. I always felt that for me was important for me to feel like a person,
right,
also because the transition, even though I love being a mother and I'm so grateful that I have the luxury of staying home with them, at the same time, like I did have to navigate like who am I in addition to, and keep in mind I had also just recently become frum.
You just recently got married.
Yeah.
I was
newly
frum,
newly a wife, newly a parent. So it's a lot to navigate.
Right, lot.
So you know, like if you're having an existential crisis, don't worry. It's normal. But it'll pass, hopefully. But I just remember being very busy and very hectic, but also there was a lot more freedom of time that I had. And also they're little and they're babies. Like it's not as mentally taxing in the sense that like I wasn't having conversations with them. So it was like mentally taxing in the sense that I was like, felt a lot of maternal guilt about what kind of parent was I being, you know, like I was never the type of mommy to like really sit down and play with my kids. And so then, of course, I felt guilt about that.
Right.
And then, of course, I felt guilt about having my projects on my side and they would be like watching something while I'd be like creating something. I feel like...
all normal.
Yeah, exactly. It was, and then my husband's work schedule was very erratic at the time when they were all like in... Like when he was a resident, of course, I didn't see him for like 3 days in a row or whatever. It was intense. And then when he had his first job, the hours were very erratic. So it was challenging in the sense that there was just no continuity. There was no schedule.
And kids need schedule.
Yeah. Also. So it was like sometimes I was doing bedtime by myself. Sometimes I wasn't. And then like when he would be around for bedtime, then it was like, but then he didn't know what a routine was because he was never around for it. And then he would want to have fun with them because he didn't see them so much.
So we need
much.
Like the marriage parenting conversation to happen.
Oh my gosh. You know, 100%.
It's a whole nother.
No, it's a whole, they're all interconnected. I feel like all of our topics are connected on some level. But I loved going places with them. I loved, like, I remember once, like, I think I had four kids at the time, and I had a friend who was marrying off a daughter in Muncie, and she'd invited us, and I was like, no, yes, no, I can't. And then at the end of the day, I put all my kids in the minivan, and I drove from Cleveland to Muncie, and I found someone to stay with who I knew from wherever, and like it just felt like such an adventure. Like it just like if I could describe those years in a nutshell, it was like a stressful adventure.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I have a story, the opposite of that. I think in those early years, everything was such a big deal. When you're a new mom, everything is a big deal.
I hear that. Okay?
Yeah. So I have a story where I had not even a newborn, he was 6 months old. And I had a friend's wedding, one of my friends was getting married. And I was so anxious about flying with a young baby by myself because I'd have to go alone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That I didn't go to one of my closest friends' weddings.
Oh,
and like talk about regrets. And
it's so hard.
Now yeah. It's a secret I can't share on a podcast with thousands of listeners. But now I'm like, hey, I got two kids with me. Let's hop on a plane. Let's go somewhere.
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
But this is natural. I think it's pretty normal.
Yeah,
so like
yeah.
in the beginning, like you're just so new at it
100%.
And you're stressing out and everything needs to be perfect. And you just wing it, you know.
Yeah.
But I do also remember we have albums from those early years. I think a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't print your pictures now, but it's like just that laughing cliche joke because we all experience that, but I'll look at these albums and my younger kids will be like, why don't we have albums? But they went on so many trips. And I'm like, first of all, we haven't documented your trips, and you also have. But yes, when you have kids all in a lump, more or less, you can just, they all want to go to the muse more or less.
Right. More or less.
It's not like you've got the older going, oh, I don't want to go anywhere. In the early years, it's much easier to do things as a family.
Right.
And now I have such regret. Now I'm like, it's so sad. When's the last time we ever did anything on a Sunday? Because I think life is crazier.
Right. And this one has soccer. And this one has a friend. And this one, yeah, exactly. 100%.
They just said to me, my two elementary kids, where it's funny, my oldest is a boy and a girl, and then I have another boy and a girl, and it's like the repeat.
Yeah, you were very organized.
Boy, girl, boy, girl, boy. Yeah. The only downside to that is that you don't have two girls in high school together, which I think is just the cutest thing.
Yeah, I'm also not going to have that. That's true. No, yeah.
Anyway, so all of a sudden, so it was sort of like the repeat, or I make my older ones watch me make the new mistakes and raise them differently than they were raised, and much less strict and XYZ. Anyway, but they were just like, we like going to art museums. And I'm like, you do? Let's go. When can we go? I never knew you liked it. Like, I took them years ago. We just stopped going on trips. Also, COVID threw a wrench, and we just got used to not doing anything. No,
that's very true. Okay, let's validate everyone right now because of that. Yeah, that's very, very, very true. Yeah. I know I chaperoned two trips. I didn't really chaperone. The seventh grade boys went to the zoo. I drove them there and I picked them up. But then I came a little bit early to take my 3-year-old around the zoo. And then I just went with the first grade boys, went to the zoo for an end of the year trip. And I went also with them. Awesome. And I'm taking my toddler around. Of course, I'm chaperoning or whatever. So it's not like I'm like really able to walk around with her and like look, here are the elephants. It's more like, where are they? Let's go. Oh, get down. Don't touch that. Whatever. But I was thinking like Nebuch, like I haven't taken her anywhere, you know, and it's just, it is so different, but I don't have the same luxury of time that I did. Like now I have carpools, I have obligations, I have, and also I'm working more. So it's a very different.
We're on the same. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
That.
We really, really are.
I also just wanted to mention, like, in terms of, you know, those early years, like in the beginning, you just want to get it right. You want to do it all right.
Yeah.
It depends on how like much of a perfectionist you are. Yes. But there is even that want and desire that like your first child is your everything. Like you want to give them all the experiences, like, oh, it's time for them to do Little League, and oh, it's time for this. And it's so beautiful because it's like what parent with their first child is like not going to grab on that opportunity to like let your child learn how to ride a bike when it's time.
Yeah.
By the time it's your fourth kid, you're like, oh my gosh, shoot, I think she's like too old to learn how to ride a bike.
I'm like, oh, I have to go to Walmart. The bikes are all dysfunctional.
Right, exactly. Like you don't have, now are those older kids, do they lose out? Younger kids rather, and then family, do they lose out? Maybe not.
But they gain other things that the older kids didn't have. Like I look at right now at my toddler, and like she's got all of these older siblings who love her and are ready, like they think she's adorable. Right. When, except, you know, some of them think she's annoying sometimes because she's like taking their stuff and breaking it and coloring all over it. Fine, but she has like this whole like fan club like waiting for her that my older kids didn't have. So it's like, yes, there are certain things that she's missing out on for sure that I do feel guilt over. But at the same time, like I was thinking it's so fun growing up to be her. Like it's so fun to be her.
And
you know?
Love is the most valuable thing. Yeah. It's not about the things or the experiences. It's living in a family. That's the beautiful thing. I'm an only child, so I didn't experience this.
But to
have siblings who can shower love on you,
it's
that
amazing.
Is more valuable than any of the, oh, she didn't get this kind of toy when she reached this
milestone, exactly. You know? You missed the window for that or whatever. Like I realized that I didn't take first day of school or last day of school pictures this year. I was like, okay. I like seeing everyone else's pictures, so thanks.
Yeah, exactly.
But I was thinking when you were saying with the first, like there, I remember having like a really paralyzing feeling of I just don't want to make a mistake. And so then I just was like paralyzed to make choices, and it really wreaked havoc with like my like listening to my intuition, you know, of like, am I doing the right thing? And also because Baruch Hashem, my kids were so close together, which is like not something I take for granted. You know, I know so many people struggle, but it definitely, especially since I didn't grow up in a big family, it was a steep learning curve like how to juggle everything and how to do things.
By the way, I just want to say that even if you do come from a large family, no one's ever a parent until they're a parent.
Yes.
We're all learning.
And also you could be from a large family and all your siblings are married and older than
that
you, and you
true.
Also like, yeah, exactly. Thank you. That's a very important point to bring out. I appreciate that. You could be the youngest. You could be whatever.
And it's so natural for all to be like, oh, I don't want to make a mistake, or is this a significant mistake that I made, or is this damaging? I mean, there's like, but that's why we're more laissez-faire and chilled out generally, mothers generally, as they, you know, get older.
Right, we learn which battles to pick, kind of, also.
Yeah, you learn battles. You realize this wasn't such a big deal. You're also much more comfortable in your skin.
Yeah.
And not everything is such a big deal. You know what I mean?
Right, right, exactly.
And, you know, I guess that sort of transitions into what you wish, I'm curious, Rifki, you would have known, having a little hindsight, if now you're looking back.
Yeah, I know, right? I think one of the things that I was thinking about when we were preparing for this episode was that, like, how the kind of parent that I thought I needed to be was not really actually the kind of parent that I actually need to be.
Ooh. So how did you figure out the kind of parent that you needed to be?
I'm still figuring it out.
Uh-huh.
But at this...
it doesn't look like your image of what you thought it was.
Exactly. You know, I'm trying to think about how to describe that. But, like, I had certain things of, like, this is what a mom needs to do, or this is what a family needs to look like, this is what dinner needs to look like. It's about all the expectations of, like, what is mothering going to be like?
Interesting.
And then realizing that my kids are... they're each individuals with individual strengths and challenges and needs. And, you know... I guess it's probably normal to have like dreams and images of like, this is what a family is going to look like, you know, that we, either from your own childhood or from people whose houses you spent time in, you know, and just to imagine what type of mom you're going to be. And then like the children that Hashem gives us is going to necessarily more kind of dictate the type of mom that you're going to end up being also, like with their own challenges. And so don't stress out so much about being a perfect mom would be my advice to myself. Like you're going to get there. And also don't be so afraid to make mistakes, because you're going to make mistakes. Sorry. It's just going to happen.
And everyone, that's good.
Yeah. Everyone makes mistakes. We're all learning together. We're growing together. Family First had like a really, what was it? They had a whole thing of like people, maybe by the Pesach edition, the Pesach issue. It was a whole bunch of like mothering mantras, and some of them were so good. I actually took it out of the magazine and I had
it. I love
like,
that.
Yeah. It was so good. And like, just like, we're growing together. You know, I'm growing up as a parent. Like I wasn't a parent until I had kids. So like,
that's
I'm growing up as a parent while my children are growing up. And like, it's a natural part of the process.
It is. And it's meant to be that way. And it's pretty frightening, but it's how it's meant to be.
It is totally terrifying. And I was very much like, I know a lot of people are like really good about like reading books and knowing what kids are up to in stages. And like, I was never very good at that. Mm-hmm. And so like, that was like, I was always just a little more like flying by the seat of my skirt, I guess.
It just reminds me, I remember learning in seminary, this idea of the good enough parents.
Yeah. Oh, you learned it in seminary? That's so nice.
I learned it in seminary. I had a class that like interweaved psychology with Torah Hashkafa.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
I don't remember exactly the study, but the idea is that our children really just need a good enough parent.
Right.
And there, of course, are measurements for what that means, psychologically speaking.
Right, exactly.
That I did not do any preparation for this.
They can look it up.
Google it. But, you know, I feel like in modern society, there is such an image of what a mom should look like.
Yes.
How the kinds of birthday parties she needs to make. All It's just really not necessary. It's very beautiful, but there are certain things that our children need from us that are good enough.
Right.
And they will be successful if it's good enough.
Right. And I feel like, you know, right, exactly. That expectation of what is a mother supposed to look like. Mm. And sometimes I think it is helpful to look and to say, like, is it worth it for me to stretch myself in this area and give the child like X kind of birthday party that
and it may be.
It may be, but it also may not be.
Right.
And so it's like, cause each child is different. And sometimes like we do things because we want to be perceived as a good parent. And sometimes we're doing something because it's actually what's good for our child. And they do not always align. And it takes a lot of self-awareness to like be honest with ourselves about, am I doing this for me or am I doing this for my
kid? Can I just tell you, we have a bar mitzvah coming up and we're talking about the kiddush. And my husband's like, no one ever really does this for the kids, right? Like, the kid doesn't need a huge kiddush.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, like, who is doing that? Like, I'm like, well, there is this idea that we live in a Jewish community and it is nice to celebrate with your community. But, like, it's just funny. I appreciated that, like, bare bones approach. Like, let's just stop. Like, there's so many things that we do. Really, who are we doing it for?
Yeah.
We're still making a kiddush, but you know.
No, because like, you want to celebrate with your
there's
friends.
Value
and honestly, like, celebrate. Yeah, yes.
My husband clearly is an introvert, as you can tell from the story.
No. And I think that, exactly. But like, what type of kiddush, I think, is then the next question, you know?
Well, okay.
The, I think one of the other things this is something else that I have wanted, that I wish I would have known, is that like working on myself is an integral part of parenting. Like when I work on my own meetos and I work on my own, there was a, I'm not going to remember the source. I also have it. I took it out of the magazine and put it on my kitchen cabinet. It says, meetos are caught, not taught. Like as I think as I want to say Rabbi Cohn, I'm not going to remember his first name. Mm-hmm. That's annoying. Maybe we'll put it in the show notes if I remember. But basically, like, we model for our children the way to react. Like, if I am frustrated with my children for being short and snappy when they're irritated mm-hmm. with their siblings, well, how am I reacting when I'm irritated by something? Mm-hmm. Am I able to stay calm? Am I able to model that? Now, of course, this is the work of a lifetime. Oh, yeah. As we know, you know, changing our meadows and working on ourselves, it, like Solantar said, like, you know, it's easier to learn the entire Shas than it is to change a meadow.
Wow.
But that doesn't mean that we can't try. And I noticed for myself when I worked, there was a certain challenge that I was facing. And I really, this is many years ago, I worked on it a lot for myself to be calmer in certain situations. And I did notice a trickle-down effect to my kids. And I remember also reading Saryachavid Rigler had written an article on, a few articles, I think on Aish.com, where she talked about how she was struggling with anger, which I thought was so brave of her to like write publicly about it. And she talked about how when she conquered her anger, her children also stopped being as angry. Wow. So I felt like that was like a very powerful, like we working on ourselves has a direct impact on our parenting, even if it doesn't look like it. It's not taking a parenting class or it's not, you know, following a parenting strategy, you know, but it may not even be directly interacting with your children, but how I work on myself and how I develop myself is also parenting my children.
That is something you don't realize when you have babies, right?
Oh my gosh.
No. And it's also, you can't prepare for it.
No, because you don't know how you're going to react.
Know.
You don't even know what situations you're going to be reacting to because they don't exist yet.
It's so funny. I in terms of like the meadows thing,
yeah.
I never thought of myself as a person who ever struggled with anger. It is just not, I have other stuff that was not on my list of negative meadows. It's just not my personality. What can I say? Yeah. Through parenting, I've experienced real anger like everybody else.
Yes.
I don't think I ever felt anger before I was a parent. And it's a crazy statement.
No, I think it's a normal statement.
And your children know which buttons to press. And it's it's not easy.
And
it
also,
a huge journey.
Do you also find that like the things that I find for me, like the things that I get the most triggered by my children are like the things that I myself struggle.
But
like
that's what
it's
they
like
say,
that's, yeah, exactly.
It's also difficult when you watch your children struggling with some of your own stuff. There's so much psychology behind this.
It's
so
incredible.
Fascinating.
It's incredible.
It's like you're watching a weakness that you are so familiar with, and it's something, whether it's a pain, I'm no psychologist, probably should shut up right now, but whether it's like that painful response to like seeing your own child dealing with something, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's
intense.
I will tell you another really stupid thing that when we were younger, like things that we thought, you know, before I entered the teen stage. So I was teaching middle school and high school for years.
Yeah.
I laugh at myself. A good friend of mine said, "Hey, I'm taking this teen parenting course. Our kids were preteens at the time.
Yeah.
Or like 11. Would you like to join?" You want to know what I told her?
What?
I was like, "Oh, I teach middle school and high school. I'm really familiar with this age. I don't need the parenting course." Like, I don't know if this girl thought I was so ridiculous or like she also, like, we just had no, like, I thought I understood teenagers.
Yeah.
But when they're your own,
it's a different ballgame.
It's a whole other ballgame. I mean, I've made stupid mistakes
we
as parents.
We all have.
You wonder, like, am I? I'm the same person. Like, it's the same brain that actually had that thought. Like, what was I thinking?
I know. It really is. It's like one of the most unique experiences. It's full of growth opportunities, but full of opportunities for nachas too. It's really
exhausting physically, emotionally.
Yeah.
On all levels, mentally.
Yeah. It's really, it's nothing like it.
Some of the things I think I wish I would have known is, I mentioned before, kids don't need as much as you think they need. They don't necessarily need all the experiences that you think they need. They'll be okay. And I will say that I found that the things that my kids were actually lacking in in hindsight, now that I have older kids, they actually benefit them. So I mentioned...
That's interesting.
Yes, I mentioned like those early years where, you know, I was supporting my husband in COLAL and then supporting him in medical school.
Yeah.
I was a teacher on a full-time teacher's salary at a professional school that paid me decently, but we lived very simply and we were living out of town in very cheap apartments. So we were able to do it.
Yeah.
But does that, were my kids, I had children in those years, you know, like, were they lacking? Did they not go on the vacations? Did they have not but have also the when things they, that
when,
they have
when they
now?
Were little, like, they didn't even realize the vacations were happening.
They don't even know. But that's what I'm saying. Sometimes we think, oh, our two-year-old needs to go to Disney World. Uh-huh. I'm just saying, like, they didn't have anything like that. They had so little.
Yeah.
But were they deprived?
No.
I don't think so. And they look back, by the way, that's what I'm saying. They look back at that time as teens as a special time.
Yeah.
And it's like, at the time, by the way, I just want to say, I didn't think I was depriving my kids because we didn't have a lot of money. I really did not feel that way.
Yeah.
But you may wonder, like, what did they feel?
Right,
and
exactly.
I think that in the end, it benefited them.
Well, and I think that there's a lot of value in that also of just like less, I don't know, there's... letting them be bored, letting them figure things out themselves, like not constantly having them go from thing to thing to thing, you know, although it is obviously deeply aggravating when you hear them say, I'm bored, there's nothing to do. I'm like, yes, because our basement is completely devoid of toys and games. Yes. And there's also nothing to eat.
right.
But, sometimes giving them the space to be bored and to figure things out and to not have everything like completely scheduled and packed. Like, I think I remember reading that actually is very good. It's really, really good.
Right.
Just not from like a financial like deprivation, but from just like
being more creative.
Yeah. You know, it's, I don't know.
I also just one more thing before we wrap up this episode. I just do want to say, don't you remember like thinking as a young mom, especially like in terms of hushcuffically or like the direction that you're putting your child on religiously, like we're going to be so motivated in terms of like the Torah and the Yiddish guide and like the Ruchnias and this initiative and that initiative and like everything you're doing. And it's all beautiful. Like my kids have such fond memories of like all the Uncle Moishi and all the Yeshiva Boys Choir. It's so important to make that atmosphere, but do not fall into the trap of thinking that their spiritual and their religious level is in your hands. That by your efforts, you are molding how they are going to turn out. Because it is not in our hands. We do need to make a shtalas. We do need to create positive Jewish homes.
Yeah.
But the longer you live on this planet, and the more you open your eyes and look at different families, you see that the results are not in your hands as a parent.
I'm so glad you're saying that. And that really is like, because they have Bechira. They have, they're their own people on their own journey and they will make their own choices.
That's right.
And yeah, exactly. I feel like I remember feeling that nervousness because obviously like I chose this life. Mm. So then I'm even a little bit more stressed out my children are also going to have choices that they're also going to make. And you know, oh boy.
Uh-oh. And if you have that ability, Rifki, to change your life around and to think for yourself and make life choices, well, maybe they have that quality in them as well.
Well, of course.
Tremendous courage to do that.
That's very nice. Thank you. Yeah. But like, I feel like, I just feel like, you know, I want them to actively... I want them to choose, obviously, living a Torah life. But I know that I can't make that choice for them. And I had realized at one point, like, I didn't want to parent from a place of fear.
Oh, I had that realization very clearly as well once.
Yeah,
it's a game changer.
It really is. And so, like, what it did for me is it enabled me to put a lot of effort into creating the type of home that, I mean, listen, it's a work in process. Let's just be very clear.
Next episode, the silver and fluxure children come on.
Gotta wait till they're adults. mid-20s, let's see how it turned out.
Yeah.
But to just put effort into creating the type of home that I would like them to grow up in. And then to understand that the results are not in my hand. I had a therapist once who had told me, she's like, Rifki, like you can't, you know that there are, like you're exactly what you said. Like you're not in charge of their outcome. Mm. Like they're going to turn out however they turn out. And she said, you know, I've seen kids from homes that are very dysfunctional turn out to be amazing.
That's fascinating.
And I've seen kids from very functional, warm, loving homes who just had so many challenges and were not able to be successful adults.
But you don't know that when you're young and it takes lived experience. And people can tell you that, but it means nothing until you see it for yourself
and that's also the thing. It's like with our kids, like, you know, you can tell them like that is going to not lead to good results. Okay. But they have to experience it themselves sometimes. They have to have that pain themselves. They have to learn something. Because when, and you know this as a teacher, when you're just giving, when you're just passively receiving information, okay, so now it's in your brain. But it, when you actually give something over and experience something yourselves, like that's when you really learn. Mm-hmm. And that's like, that's, I think, was one of the painful parts of being a parent. It's like watching your children have these painful experiences and you're like, oh, okay.
And then when they become teenagers, they have to experience it for themselves and they're going to mess up. And that's the frightening part, is how bad is the mess up going to be?
Oh man, I'm not there yet.
It is. It is.
Oh, something. Wow.
But we're not going to talk about teens.
No.
Although we have actually, someone did ask us, can you talk about raising teenagers?
Oh man. So I guess, do we want to talk a little bit about where we get our parenting advice or information? And
you tell me.
Yeah, I mean, just besides from like, you know, always like when my children were younger, I was actually thinking like I should take a course on teens. Now I'm really like in the, I have 18, so I was thinking maybe it'd be good.
Oh, I just have to say PSA.
Yeah.
When my oldest daughter was 9, I saw like behavioral changes, and I spoke to a friend of mine who's a therapist, and she's like, yes, it starts at 9.
Yeah.
So if any of you are wondering,
so like, I have three teenagers. You're telling me I have three teenagers. Actually, fantastic. Fantastic. It feels like it. That makes sense, actually. Now that you're saying that, I'm like, well, that explains so much about my household right now.
Right. But I mean, they could be, they're tweens, but the new stage starts.
So I definitely took a lot of parenting courses. Like, I subscribed to, like, all of Sarah Connor Radcliffe's everything, because she's fantastic. She's, like, so validating, but also, like, encourages you to grow, which I love that. Because, like, I love validation, but I don't like validation that encourages you to remain stagnant. I only like validation that it also encourages you to then grow.
And by the way, I heard someone once call validation, it can at a certain point become indulgent. And that was like, that was so enlightening. Like, there's certain point you don't want any more validation. Yeah, yeah. Like, I need to move on.
Exactly.
I need to improve.
I took Robertson Love Tansky's parenting course. She went back when she was still living in Cleveland. There's a lot of courses out there, and I feel like I took I tried so many, and then I ended up seeing like not any one parenting course worked. Yeah. Like, I had to really cobble together something that, because like my kids are different, like they have different needs and they react differently to different strategies because they're different people. So like, you know, I wasn't able to use like the, I think that was also a very big learning point for me, is that like I kept waiting for like, oh, the one parenting strategy that was going to give me the results that like I wanted. It did not exist for me. Fine. But one of the things that really I find the most helpful right now at this point is just talking to parents who are at a stage ahead of me, who are on the same page as me, whose kids are like similar type to mine, and asking them, what did you do in X situation? What did you do here? How did you make it through this challenge or whatever? And just talking to other mothers who have been there before. Mm. I find that very, very helpful right now.
It's also the role model mentorship piece as well. That's part of it. And it's very practical to hear from someone who's ahead of you. Yeah. I like that too. I also do that.
Yeah.
In terms of parenting courses, I've definitely been there. I remember very distinctly taking a parenting course. It was very popular at the time, and it was about punishment. And having a real debate where, and this is when the more, you know, when you take courses, it's bouncing. Like you said, you have to cobble this and cobble that, but also navigating like your own intuition, like what you feel is right versus what experts are telling you,
what the book is saying or whatever. Yeah, exactly.
And then you like don't trust yourself. But then there's also, I really went through that. Yeah. I'm like, oh, I always thought punishment was XYZ, but they're telling me based on studies and evidence
that it's ABC.
It's something else. Yeah. So I had to, on one hand, be open-minded enough to receive the education, because I did need more education.
Right.
Because I didn't know. You can't only trust your intuition.
Right. You have to get data also, and you have to like get tools. You need tools in your toolbox, and then you can use your intuition about which tool is going to make sense.
That's well said, and what applies and which tool to take out. And then sometimes when to know, dump the parenting book, follow your intuition, and don't care what other people are thinking about me or looking at.
That's a big one. We didn't even talk about that.
Yes.
That's
I'd like to talk about that now, because I have gone through that parenting journey where at this point, besides issues that were really big that I have someone who I reach out to, like, this is a biggie. And it may be, by the way, also like a Rebbe, like especially when you have
boys,
teens.
Yeah,
like sometimes the Rebbe is the right person to talk to, or the teacher that your child is close to who really knows your kid really well.
Yeah,
they can be wonderful sources.
Yeah, definitely.
If you feel like-minded. But I've just gotten to the point where I just try to like stay in my lane, do what I feel based on my, not just intuition, my knowledge of this child, my knowledge of the family dynamic. I'm the child's greatest advocate. and do what I think is the right thing for this child. And the more I'm talking to this person and getting advice from that person, it just, it's, to me, I found that distracting, as I said.
Unless right, sometimes it's very, it becomes noise sometimes.
It becomes noise. Unless yeah. it is a serious or a Shiloh, like those issues, you must get seek guidance.
Yeah.
But one of the hardest parts about this is you lose confidence in your parenting journey when you do start looking at other people and wondering what other people are thinking about you because yeah. you had to make this decision. And right. that can be really difficult.
Yes.
And a big distraction.
Yes.
And parenting will challenge your confidence as a human being because, like you said, this is how we do this in our family and this is how I raise this child.
Yeah.
And it may not, you may not approve, but guess what? Don't really care. I care about this kid. And that's all that matters.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, I love that. I feel like that's a perfect place to end.
Okay, we yeah, will.
Amazing.
Food for thought. So thank you all for listening into this mini DMC. We really hope you're enjoying these.
Yeah, we definitely are.
And you can watch them too on YouTube.
Yes.
Don't forget, they're always fun.
Exactly. We're everywhere. The if you have requests for future mini DMC topics, just email us at dmc@meaningfulminute.org.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks guys.